chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome to another episode of the Swamp 247 podcast. I'm your host, Graham Hall, back with another episode, but joined this time by, not by Jacob Rudner, but by our recruiting analyst over at Swamp 247, Blake Alderman. Blake, it's good to see you, man. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a little minute.
It has been a minute, absolutely. You know, we usually bring you on to talk recruiting, especially this time of year when the class is coming together, or sometimes maybe it looks like it's fracturing a little bit. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in this episode, because first I have to go over the doom and gloom of the loss at LSU. As Florida fans realize now, the Gators dropped a 17-point loss at LSU to the Tigers in another record-breaking performance by quarterback Jaden Daniels. To recap, if you listened to our episode last week, Jaden Daniels was probable by the end of the week. He hadn't really participated much in practice. It looked like the Gators were going to have to prepare for the possibility of facing Garrett Nussmeier at quarterback, a name that is pretty familiar to Florida fans, given that his dad, Doug Nussmeier, was the offensive coordinator in Gainesville not too long ago. And Daniels ultimately is able to be cleared in the game, and maybe he should not practice most weeks because he was absolutely dynamic. He became the first player in FBS history to throw for more than 350 yards while rushing for 200 plus yards. He accounted for 5 touchdowns. The Gators simply had no answer for him throughout the night. LSU finished with 701 offensive yards, the most the program has ever given up. Florida found itself on the bad side of history. Now, Graham Mertz had another efficient performance, throwing for 313 yards. The Gators were able to establish the run. Trevor Etienne, in his return to his home state, had 99 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns, a really good performance in front of more than 30 family members. He wasn't alone. Montrell Johnson, another Louisiana native, was able to add 70-plus yards on the ground himself, but it was not enough to keep pace with LSU. There were certainly some consequential moments in that game. There was some controversy as well, in particular that diving catch by Khalil Jackson that I was so certain was a catch, but the refs must have seen something that we didn't, said that the ball came out when it hit the ground. That turns out to be a pivotal sequence because LSU answers right again and extends their lead back to double digits when Florida was looking like they had a chance to drive down the field and tie it up. So certainly a tough loss for the Gators. It marked their third straight loss now, and they have to go on the road and face another Tigers team that looks really, really good, the Missouri Tigers. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the week on Thursday. Now we're going to talk about some recruiting. I think that if you've been following recruiting, like I know a lot of our members at Swamp 247 out there are doing on a daily basis, you have seen the Gators have taken some other losses recently off of the field. We'll start with the first one. Jamonte Waller ended up decommitting from the Gators and flipping, you know, right soon after. A loss to Florida, absolutely a hit to their recruiting class, a guy that was highly ranked, a top, 60 prospect for a long time. And, you know, Blake, I'll turn it over to you. Just how expected was this? And in your mind, just how much of a loss is this losing Waller?
You know, I think from a different standpoint of for a team that needs talent infusion and is banking on this 2024 class that was ranking third in the country on 24/7 Sports, now ranks fourth after some losses there. You know, they're banking on this class being the change to the roster. So from the standpoint of losing a guy like Waller that is a top 100 type player, position of need as far as building up that front seven, a guy that they thought really highly of. This is a guy that Austin Armstrong, who built some Mississippi ties there from being the defensive coordinator at Southern Miss, had a connection with. He's a guy that Armstrong offered at Southern Miss, recruited at Alabama, and then obviously recruited again at Florida. So clearly there was some high-level interest there. It's a guy that I think from a frame-wise, I know he's listed as 6'2 on 24/7 Sports, probably closer to 6'1, 6'1 and a half range, kind of cutting hairs there. He's not that typical long and lanky type of guy. When you think of an edge, you think of, you know, TJ Searcy type player, someone that's kind of looks like they're, you know, were maybe just a little too short to play some basketball, those long and lanky type guys. But Waller was someone that they thought highly of in the sense that they compared him in some shades to a Harold Perkins type role player, maybe not, you know, maybe more of a diet Harold Perkins type of guy, but someone that could play some off ball linebacker, someone that could play that jack position in their defense and rush the edge, someone that was really versatile. So if you've watched Florida's defense, they have made some flashes of getting to the quarterback, made some quarterbacks feel uncomfortable, but they haven't really racked up the sacks. You haven't seen those on a consistent basis. That's something that Waller is good at doing. He's good at disrupting things back there, getting in the backfield, getting to the quarterback, getting his hands on him, making those guys feel uncomfortable. From that standpoint, that burns. But from the other standpoint of looking at Florida's front seven class, whether you want to put Waller as a linebacker or as an edge guy on there on the defensive line, however you want to cut that, Florida still has a really good class there. You've still got Amaris Williams, who you do have to continue to fight over, someone who's still looking around taking some trips. He and Waller were one of those guys that truly fit in that jack linebacker type position. So the way Florida kind of classifies that edge room, so an edge guy, which as far as being coached under Mike Peterson, you either play the jack or you play what they call the F position, which is kind of a souped up athletic type of defensive end, I guess, so to say, is the best way to put that. So LJ McCray, Florida's five-star defensive line, edge, commit, whatever you want to call him, he's more of a guy that they see filling at the F position. Could play some versatility there, could grow into an interior guy. You really don't know. You're probably getting the cart ahead of the horse there of how these guys are going to develop. But right now he sees someone that they play at the F position. Same thing with three-star Kendall Jackson right there to Buchholz. They see those guys being in the F position, whereas Waller and Amaris Williams were those guys at that jack position. So you've really only got one left, and that guy's looking around. So it's a sting from that point. You really want to continue to build that room there, but you've still got some guys in that edge room. And even at the linebacker position, you've got Adarius Hayes, you've got Aaron Chiles, you've got right there at linebacker there. So now I'm blanking, of course. Florida has three linebackers committed. Sorry, I was not prepared for that one. But they've got some guys there in the linebacker position room. That one makes the sting not hurt so bad. That makes things not hurt you so badly there because you've got some other options there. Could Florida look for another guy potentially at jack that fits that true type of pass rusher type guy, that true guy that can play between the linebacker and playing between the edge? We'll see. I don't know any targets there right now. Florida could very well look in the portal because they're more than likely going to need some experience there at that position. So it's a loss in that standpoint from talented player, guy in an area position that they need. But I think that it does ease the burn of needing those types of guys there, considering what Florida also has in that room.
Yeah, I think that if you had been able to follow Waller's recruitment for the last month or so, he was looking around. So you would imagine that Florida has already identified some contingency plans, even though it's so close to early signing day, a little over a month away. You would think that they have some targets that they are going after. And I think certainly that's the case as well with another guy that decided to flip right after this loss to LSU in Wardell Mack, a cornerback who ends up flipping from Florida to a team that's going to be in the SEC next year in Texas. You know, an interesting one, I think, absolutely, and maybe a little bit more of a surprise. At least that's how it appears. Just what did you make of Mack's decision to flip from Florida to Texas?
So to rewind, looked at the tape. It was Miles Graham was the linebacker that I forgot. So I'm going to go lay in traffic because how do you forget the son of Ernest Graham there as far as the guys in Florida's commitment list? And to piggyback off of Waller, I do think there was some expectation there. You know, you're taking some visits. You're looking around. He visited Auburn twice. And one of those visits, he showed back up on the Sunday. So I think there was some expectation there. Some people close to him continued to say that things were fine with Florida. Things were all good there. I think as time went on away from those visits, I think Auburn just continued to chip at him. And I think that ultimately is what made that flip happen. But for Wardell Mack, I do think there was probably a little bit more of a surprise factor for the maybe more so of the timing of him flipping from Florida to Texas. And I do think that there is more sting factor to that commitment compared to, you know, even from a ranking standpoint, if you've got Waller up as high as you do, and that's not to say that, you know, that Wardell Mack is a better player than Jamonta Waller. I just think in the simple fact of if you look at Florida's commitment list, you know, when you had Wardell Mack in the class, he was one of two true cornerbacks in that class. You pair him with a guy like Teddy Foster, the three-star corner there out of Sarasota area. You know, Florida only had two guys there. So you leave your class with one guy in Foster, someone who I think has a lot of intangibles. There's a lot of, you know, better years ahead of him as far as his play, but he's still pretty raw. So Florida is left at a position where you've only got one guy that's a developmental guy. And I think you can bank off of what you did in the 2023 class as far as they had a really good haul there. But Florida, I think from a surprise standpoint, again, it was more of the timing. But you've got a guy in Wardell Mack that was planning on taking visits right after he committed to Florida there in early August. He was a guy that was still talking to all of his finalists of LSU, Florida State, Texas, was continuing to have conversations going on with those guys. When you've got a guy that lives out of state, you know, lives in over there in Louisiana where he was, and you're coming off your commitment a couple days, couple weeks, whatever have you, and you're already talking about taking visits, you know that that one's going to be one to where you have to continue to fight with him for him all the way through to early signing day. He was at Florida State this past weekend, had attempted to make some trips to Texas. I don't think he's ever made it there since his commitment to Florida, made it back to Austin. But the thought was there of trying to get to Texas. So the conversations were ongoing. I don't really know if that was one where Florida's play was the factor there or if it was just a guy that was still really into Texas. There could be a multitude of reasons of why this flip happened. I don't think it really matters. You lost out on him. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what matters. You lost out on a guy. Florida's going to have to continue to recruit some of these guys that are in their commitment list that are still looking around. But I think for a sting factor, I think that Wardell Mack, just from the simple fact of what you have in your class, I think that burns a little bit more than a guy like Jamonta Waller.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Yeah, especially with Florida looking at, you know, potentially losing Jason Marshall Jr. after the season to the NFL draft. If he does decide to go, even though I think you could make the argument that he would be benefited in returning next year, Florida has shown a huge tendency to play a high amount of underclassmen, particularly freshmen, in the secondary this season. So obviously that's a blow to a guy that could have been playing as early as next season. So finding someone, especially this late in the process, who's able to come in and fill the void and has a similar level of talent is obviously going to be a difficult process, especially as you mentioned, with Mac being a little bit more of a surprise in a sense from him flipping, even though, as you said, you know, what anytime a guy is taking visits throughout his recruitment, discussing
watch him.
Programs, you always got to watch him, right? And so I think that Florida does have some contingency plans here. You wrote about this over at Swamp247, some names to watch, and we're going to just briefly go over some of those here. Just on who's on the radar for the Gators in finding a replacement for Mac this late in the process, 5 weeks until signing day. Who are some of the names out there that could be realistic options for the Gators?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if these guys are necessarily replacement types. I mean, they're guys that Florida was continuing to recruit even when Wardell Mac was in their class. They had been wanting to add at least one more cornerback. I think a talent pool would have maybe opened the door for some more there. But the need is even bigger now. You know, like I said before, you've got one guy in the class there. I think the main target that Florida would really love to flip is four-star Jameer Grimsley right there at the Tampa area at Tampa Catholic. He's been committed to Alabama since early July, late June, since the summer. Is a guy that has continued to hear from Florida, was a guy that Corey Raymond has really liked. You know, he went from, I think, a January springtime earlier this year type offer to where a guy that they were looking at as an athlete. He does play wide receiver. He does play defensive back for the high school level. He was someone that Florida liked really on both sides of the ball, just from his length, his footwork, all those types of intangibles he has there. And as time went on, as far as this year goes, Grimsley started to gravitate a little bit more towards playing defensive back. And as Corey Raymond did his research on there, went out there in the spring evaluation period to get eyes on Grimsley, he's a guy that really rose up his wish list. He's a guy that Florida was really pushing for, was really trying to make there for a priority type target. I think that Florida's footing in that recruitment started to get in there maybe a little bit too late because he had already planned out several official visits there in June. Florida was not one of those. He did get on campus for an unofficial visit there in June. And I do think that Florida was starting to get a little bit of footing, but I just think it was a little too late. You know, I think that if Florida could have got an official visit, who knows what would have happened. He's grown up a fan of Florida. His family have grown up. You know, they've all watched Florida together collectively. So I do think that there is a place in his heart that leaves the door open for Florida. He visited Jacksonville to watch Florida and Georgia play. He was there up there with his dad. Conversations have still happened with Florida. He was actually looking to be at Florida for the Arkansas game, but instead chose to go to Alabama LSU, where he's been committed as Alabama. He's visited Tuscaloosa, I think, three times this year and then watched him again whenever they were playing USF there in Tampa. So visits are still ongoing to Alabama. This isn't a guy that Alabama is just, you know, ignoring or don't feel any certain type of way about by any means. It's a guy that Alabama really likes. But since Grimsley did not make that visit to Florida there for the Arkansas game, he's looking to possibly return for the Florida State game. That's the plan as of now. But you've already got a guy that has changed plans on a dime there from visiting Florida once to visiting somewhere else. So we'll see the closer we get. There's still 2 weeks to that game. But an official visit is possible there for December as well. So the door may be cracked, however you want to put it there, because you are going to have to flip a guy from Alabama who's playing well, has a good track record with defensive backs under Nick Saban and even Travaris Robinson, who Florida fans know a lot as far as what he did for Florida with defensive backs. But the door is still open enough, and he hasn't closed the door enough to where he's still interested in taking visits to Florida. He's still having conversations going on. So no matter how hard you may think that flip will be or whatever, what have you, you got to keep chipping away at him because he's a guy that Corey Raymond does still like. I think another guy that Florida has really been high on for most this year is four-star Xavier Mincy, right there at Daytona Beach Mainland. He's teammates with Florida's five-star defensive line commit, edge commit, whatever you want to classify him at, LJ McCray. I don't know that it's a package deal type thing. You know, I don't see that LJ McCray being in Florida's class being something that Mincy, you know, is like, oh man, I want to go play with my boy. Like, I think that that's a positive in some sense because they are familiar with each other, but I don't see them as a package deal by any means. I think that he's like Florida on his own, just from what they've had to produce as far as what Corey Raymond's done, what they see him as. He's listed as a safety on 24/7 Sports, but Corey Raymond has, for I think the entirety of this year, has never once pitched safety. He's a guy that he has viewed as a cornerback in the defense. That's something that Mincy has really liked. I think to date he's visited Florida more than any other school, but visits are still ongoing. He was at Miami for one of their games earlier this year. I don't recall which one. He's been to Florida for two games now. He was just at Florida State this past weekend for their game against against Miami. So he did get to see the Hurricanes there. He should be back this coming weekend when Miami hosts at Louisville. I think it's possible he gets back to Florida State. We'll see. He's still kind of ironing out plans there. Alabama has gotten him on campus for an official visit. He's looking at a possible return sometime there, maybe before signing day. He's trying to figure out his visits. So this went from a recruitment to where I think that Florida was viewed as kind of running away with it in the spring and in the summer months. And competition has got a little bit tighter. The schools that I've heard the most about are Florida, Miami, Alabama, starting to get a little more chatter about them. He did just visit Florida State this past weekend. I'm not really quite sure where the Seminoles fit into the factor there. They are pretty heavy on a defensive back class. They could potentially take some more guys. I think spots could potentially see how hard the Seminoles push there. But he did show up there. So, you know, there obviously is some interest there. But I've heard more about the Hurricanes, Crimson Tide, and the Gators. But that's a guy that is not looking to make a decision until January 6th there at the I call it the Army Bowl. I think it's the All-American Bowl now, that All-Star game there in Texas. So he's not looking to make a decision there until the Army game. So he's still got, I would assume, probably a month, because I see him as a guy that would potentially make probably a silent signing there in December signing period, kind of keep that quiet, and then eventually make that decision there public at that game in January. And Charles Lester is another guy, four-star defensive back there out of Venice, Florida, has been committed to Florida State for several months now. That's going to be a tough one. I do know that Florida is still having some conversations with him. He visited for the Charlotte game back in September. But that's a guy that grew up a lifelong fan of Florida State, is committed to Florida State, has continued to visit there, could potentially visit Florida for the Florida State game. I'd probably need to double check there because it's been a couple weeks, which is like an entirety in recruiting if you don't follow up on those things, if visits, plans have changed. So could show up for the Florida State game, has also mentioned a possible official visit there in early December. I do think that one's going to be tough, but we'll see. You know, you never know. You get him on campus, you'll see what happens. I think Jordan Pride, the Texas A&M defensive back commit there up in Blountstown up there in the Panhandle area. Florida's had some conversations. I don't know that he's really someone that I would put in that category with those three guys that I've mentioned already, but he is someone that Florida's been talking to. I think they see a little bit of versatility in his game. Could play some corner, could play some safety, possibly some nickel. So there are conversations. That's a guy that could potentially visit Florida. Antoine Belgrave Shorter is one that I would maybe put as a back burner type guy to keep an eye on there for Florida. He's committed to Penn State. He's from up there in the Jacksonville area. Florida hasn't offered yet, but they've been evaluating this year. So could that be someone they turn to depending on how the board shakes out closer to the early signing period? We'll see. But, you know, here we are sitting there as of, you know, November 14th, and Florida has yet to offer. So time is certainly running out there. But those are a couple names I think would be following, should be followed there at the cornerback position. We'll see if anything shakes out, whether it's position they turn to in the portal, whether it's position they, some new names pop up there as the next month goes along. But those are a very long-winded way of explaining some guys that Florida's still taking a look at.
You would think that Florida is able to help themselves in landing some of these guys, considering they've played, what, you know, 35% of their players are freshmen right now. There's obviously playing time available, and when you lose Mac in the class, there gives you a little bit of a need there where you can amplify a little pressure. I always think it kind of is a double-edged sword recruiting guys like this so heavily while you have players committed, because you could end up, you know, rubbing them the wrong way and pushing them out of this class. And so keeping in contact, making sure that they're an option throughout the cycle, always seems to be in their best interest. And if something like this happens, you're able to, you know, make a full push for them. You know, Mincy is a name I think a lot of Florida fans are very familiar with. If they're able to keep him away from either the Seminoles or the Hurricanes, I think that would be a massive land for the Gators. You know, keep that Daytona mainland pipeline going to Florida, just knowing the talent that they have there, the offers that Florida has already extended to some other guys on that team. So I think that it's absolutely something to watch. We're going to have a ton of recruiting content over at Swamp 247. Blake does a fantastic job as always, and you're going to want to be tuned in for the next 5 weeks through early signing day and into January as well. It's going to be a busy next couple of months for the Gators. A lot of things are going to shake out. A lot of news is going to break, absolutely. So you don't want to miss anything. Next week, we're going to have a really good promo going on right after Thanksgiving that you're going to want to take advantage of if you're not already a member of Swamp 247. And like I said, we'll be back later this week to preview Florida's final road game of the year, Saturday's 7:30 p.m. Eastern contest in Columbia, Missouri, against the Tigers, a team that's only lost two games this season and has given Florida a challenge seemingly every single year since they've been in the SEC, even though Florida was able to prevail last year 24-17 in Gainesville over Coach Eli Drinkwitz's team, but they look much improved this year. We'll have a full breakdown preview of that later in the week. But as for now, that's going to do it for us. If you're not following Blake over at Twitter, make sure you give him a follow at @Blake_Alderman. And we will be back next week, or later in this week, excuse me, talk about Missouri. That's going to do it for this episode of the Swamp 247 podcast. For Blake Alderman, I'm Graham Hall. We'll see you next time.